Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. There's something about families singing together in harmony. I mean, people have been remarking on this since at least the Carter family back in the 1920s. Obviously, there are great harmony groups that aren't related, and in fact, we'll be talking about one of the most famous in just a moment. But there's an almost spooky sense of connection and communion when you have brothers singing together, like the Beach Boys or the Everly Brothers, or sisters singing together, like the Andrews Sisters or, more recently, First Aid Kit. Actually, the Swedish sisters who make up First Aid Kit were a major influence on today's musical guests, Lily and Madeline, two sisters from Indianapolis who have their own brand of indie folk pop. They'll play live for us later. We're also going to give you a sneak preview of a big Soundcheck podcast that's coming up. But let's get back to the idea of great harmony groups that aren't necessarily family.
Oh, Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei.
Back in 1961, in a small Greenwich Village venue called The Bitter End, a folk trio called Peter, Paul, and Mary took the stage together for the first time. Less than 2 years later, they were singing in front of the Lincoln Memorial for hundreds of thousands of people during the famous March on Washington of 1963. Now, half a century or so later, Peter Yarrow and Noel Paul Stuckey, the two surviving members of the group, are looking back at their explosive career of music and political activism. And joining me here in the studio today is Peter Yarrow, Peter of Peter, Paul, and Mary. Welcome.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to meet you and know that you yourself were a picker. That, for those of you who don't know what picker means, that means someone who plays any instrument.
I was a hack. You are a picker.
Well, I think with folk music, you know, there's a saying, good enough for folk, you know, so it's all good.
All right. So starting that evening at the Bitter End back in 1961, you know, it's less than 2 years later that you're performing at the March at Washington in front of hundreds of thousands of people. Did that, the kind of meteoric rise of Peter, Paul, and Mary, did that take the three of you by surprise?
You know, when you fall in love, you're not surprised. You're just living it. You're too deeply into it. When you're doing anything with all your heart, and it fills you up with extraordinary wonderment, you're not looking at it from a perspective apart. You're just doing it, and we weren't even, I would say, aware of our success in a way, because it was just the way it was. But what happened in the 1963 March on Washington, when we sang this, I'll sing this just a second for you, it says, how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. And when we sang this, we were not performing the song. A quarter of a million people who were there knew the song. It had just peaked on the charts the week before. They held hands and they sang together. So what was created is typical of folk music. It was not a performance from people by a stage. It was an inclusive event in which the people themselves, when they sang If I Had a Hammer and Blowing in the Wind with Us, were saying, we are creating this moment too. And that was in conjunction, for those of you who are too young to put this together, and there are hopefully some of you who are on the air who are listening, without putting you down, Dr. Martin Luther King gave his extraordinary speech there. And after that, when Mary put her hand in mine and said, Peter, we're watching history, we indeed had that epiphany that most people did, and the rest of our careers was shaped to a certain degree by the knowledge that people themselves, when they gather together in this kind of way, can affect the course of history.
So in the upcoming documentary, you talk about that moment, playing Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind in front of this crowd at the March on Washington as kind of changing the way you saw the world and your place in it.
That's right.
So had Peter, Paul, and Mary up to that point been just kind of a folk group? Did it then become something different post-1963?
It became different in a certain way. Mary grew up as a very, very, in a very left-wing home. Paul Robeson had sung to her, you know, lullabies when she was a kid. Her parents were journalists. She was part of the group of people that went down to the White House and ringed the White House praying and singing when the Rosenbergs were put to death by electrocution. She had been a part of a teenage folk group called the Song Swappers that Pete Seeger had put together that has a couple of records out that you can get at the Library of Congress. I had grown up with that similar perspective, but not as quite as articulated left wing. Mm. But my mother was a member of the Teachers Union, Planned Parenthood. So when we came together, Mary and I, and Pete was always my kind of mentor, although he didn't know it, and we had that point of view. Noel, Paul, was from the Midwest. So he went along with this, and his music was not folk music. It was jazz and pop and classical music, but he was very engaged by this point of view. And so we were already there in terms of an advocacy perspective. What had not happened was that the epiphany of understanding that believing in this, we were not alone in the sense that people thought they were before. And the essence of that march was that it let people know that we could be effective. Right. And so that's what changed the course of our lives. Not the political perspective, but the sense that we could make a difference.
Yeah. We're speaking with Peter Yarrow, the co-founder of Peter, Paul, and Mary, along with Noel Paul Stuckey and the late Mary Travers, who died in 2009. The book is out now, Peter, Paul, and Mary, 50 Years in Life and Song. The album Discovered, Live in Concert, a collection of songs never before heard on any of Peter, Paul, and Mary's albums, comes out on November 17th. And the documentary 50 Years with Peter, Paul, and Mary airs on PBS on December 1st. And so basically, Albert Grossman, who was Bob Dylan's manager.
No, he wasn't. He was my manager. Then he was Peter, Paul, and Mary's manager. And then he came to me and he said, Peter, what do you think of the possibility? Because at this point, we were great partners and co. Mm-hmm. Albert had suggested the creation of Peter, Paul, and Mary to me as a solo artist. And I went looking for other partners and with Albert, and that's how Peter, Paul, and Mary came about. It turned out that Noel already knew Mary, so in a sense, but what the magic was when we sang together the first time, it was impossible not to acknowledge
right. That
this was an extraordinary meeting of hearts and voices. But then, after we were together for some time, because of the prominence of Peter, Paul, and Mary, he literally came to me and said, is it okay if? And I said, I think it would be great. I love Bobby. But Bobby was virtually unknown. In right. fact, it was Blowing in the Wind that broke him out into the vast American public's awareness.
Well, the reason I bring him up is, I mean, you know, most people do know that he was famously Bob Dylan's manager later on. But the question is, how involved was Albert in kind of the curious selection process that you guys used for, you know, whether you were doing originals, covers, if you were doing covers, whose they were?
He absolutely... The most important thing that Albert gave to us and to Bobby Dylan and to Richie Havens and to Odetta and to Ian and Sylvia and to Gordon Lightfoot and to Janis Joplin was to protect us from the kind of direction and intervention by the suits, by the organizations that ran record companies and other associated institutions that affected the music. He respected. Without Albert, I don't think Bobby would have had the same opportunity to be who he was. And it was Albert that changed the music business in that way because he negotiated contracts. He was an extremely effective business person, and he was totally on the side of his artists. So he, respecting that, he would have input to us. But he would not. He would never suggest that. Put it this way: we respected him so much that when he said, "I love this song, Stewball," you know, you got to consider it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were others. There's a wonderful song that he suggests, "The Handsome Cabin Boy," that we never did do, but. That was a minority. It was also true in The Great Mandela. While I was writing it, I only wrote the verses, and he heard it, and he said, you know, it really needs a kind of a philosophical interlude after that. That kind of direction or that kind of suggestion was hugely meaningful.
Yeah. So you mentioned The Great Mandala, which, you know, in the upcoming documentary, someone points out is like one of the great protest anti-war songs of the 60s. When you were in this process, when you had just written the verses, was that kind of Buddhist idea already there, or was that the philosophical part that Albert suggested you
That's
add?
That's the philosophical part that Albert suggested.
And as you listen to the song, and we'll hear a little bit of it now, this kind of endless cycle, you know, the mandala, this is a story that has come up, you know, that continues to cycle through human history.
Right.
And it is the topic of this song written by Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
So I told him that he'd better shut his mouth and do his job like a man. And he answered, "Listen, Father, I will never kill another. He thinks he's better than his brother that died. What the hell does he think he's doing to his father who brought him up right? Take your place on the great Mandela as it moves through your brief moment of time."
Just a little bit of Peter, Paul, and Mary's recording of The Great Mandala, written by Peter Yarrow, co-founder of Peter, Paul, and Mary, and my guest here in the Soundcheck studio. Now, what was the... I mean, you came out of this this fertile breeding ground of all different types of... You know, you had a young Bob Dylan, but you also had Dave Van Ronk, and you had Odetta, and you had...
Yeah.
You know, this incredible coming together of talent.
Right.
What was the fact that the three of you had this very polished sound in a circle where authenticity and a kind of rough-hewn sound was the thing. How did people kind of?
Well, that wasn't actually the case. There were, at the time, there was a schism, which was artificial. In each generation, folk music changes by what is called the folk process. Mm-hmm. That's part of being a folk song. It's adopted by each generation and made their own in their own language, so that you don't expect the people from the southern mountains that sing an English ballad to sing it with an English accent. You know, it's right. just not going to happen. They make it their own. In the same sense, we sang as ourselves, and that was our authenticity. But it's also true that Joan Baez was not a rough-hewn sound.
True enough.
Judy Collins was not a rough-hewn sound. Dave Van Ronk had adopted the posture of an attitude of blues singers. Mm-hmm. Bob Dylan, you know, was steeped in the legacy of and the aesthetic perspective of Woody Guthrie.
Right.
At whose, you know, hospital bed he said. So there was a whole range of the way in which people performed.
You talked a moment about how each generation has, you know, takes a folk song and makes it its own. Peter, Paul, and Mary created this sort of body of work that has come to us as folk songs, even though we know you wrote this one, Dylan wrote that one, Gordon Lightfoot wrote this. Now that, you know, we're post Peter, Paul, and Mary with the death of Mary Travers, what has happened to those songs? I mean, you're still here. Do you perform those songs solo? And if so, is it a different song now?
Well, I do perform the songs solo, and I sometimes perform with Noel. But these songs are around. They are they're in the summer camps. They're in the schools. They're in the churches, the synagogues, the mosques even. But they're not going away. They were there before the folk renaissance, and they will stand as part of our culture for a long time.
Well, and that's, you know, it's not so much where is it now, where has it been, but this kind of evolution that is part of the folk process. You talked about
that's
it before.
Right, yeah.
Even though it's still you, it's now you solo. And so those songs from 40 and 50 years ago, when you're performing without Mary and without Paul, they're going to become different songs somehow.
Well, of course they are. But, you know, it's also true that people, when I sing or when Noel, Paul, and I sing together, they say, I can hear Mary's voice in you. It's like hearing a couple that are answering each other's
finishing each other's sentences.
Kind of interfacing with the way in which they talk. They hear the cadence and the music and the feeling of something that was deeply habitual and deeply absorbed over a long period of time. So sometimes, actually, when Noel and I sing together, they say, I swear to God, I heard Mary's voice. And this is not something that's gone. Mary's presence continues. But most importantly, not just the music, but what the substance of what it was that compelled us to stay together, which groups don't do, you know, they not with the original members, except in very rare circumstances.
Right. Peter Yarrow is my guest on Soundcheck, co-founder, of course, of the folk group Peter, Paul, and Mary. And Peter, when you were just talking about, you know, it's in the camps, I'm getting word from the control room that both our engineer Jason and our producer Katie have both had the experience of singing "Leaving on a Jet Plane" in summer camp.
Right.
That, you know.
You know what I'd like to do?
What?
I'd like you to hear what it's like for me to sing "Leaving on a Jet Plane" and hear a little bit what it's like for Mary to sing. They'll do it in a different key.
Okay.
And then you'll say, you know what? They're singing from the same heart place. And I sing this all the time. And remember Mary in the way that we did at Mary's memorial when Noel and I said to the audience, you sing the chorus, we'll sing our parts. And in that way, she became a part of it. I'll sing a little bit like this. All my bags are packed, I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye. But the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. The taxi's waiting, he's blowing his horn. Already I'm so lonesome, I could cry. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. Don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go. And now you can hear the way Mary sounds when she sings it.
All my bags are packed, I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye. But the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. Taxi's waiting, he's blowing his horn. Already I'm so lonesome, I could cry. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't.
So that version of Leaving on a Jet Plane from Peter, Paul, and Mary hit number one on the charts in 1969. Pretty much, Peter, a capstone to a great decade for the band. You had many top 10 songs, but this one actually hit the top of the charts.
Sure.
And after that comes a period of what in the documentary is described as kind of like burnout. Paul goes and, you know, discovers or rediscovers his faith and starts
with Jesus. He becomes a born-again Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that had occurred prior to 1969. And we were struggling in the group because we were going and pulling in different directions in terms of our kind of vision of what our lives should be about. And it was not only in that area, but we were needing to have a period of time to get back to being with our families, to knowing who we were as individuals. And I was soon to be married and have a couple of kids with Mary Beth. And so that was a very productive watershed time for us. And then we got together again in 1978.
Right.
And we were more solid as human beings, and we could more easily accommodate and say, okay, I've got my life now. I've got a way to express it. We're going to work a limited period of time. And when we are together, we're going to be subject to the group will.
Well, in the documentary, Mary talks about, you know, when you all came back, you had grown up. You'd had some time with family and stuff.
Yeah.
At around the time that the band goes on hiatus, you had spent some time in prison on a kind of a morals charge with an underage girl. Was it hard for you to then come back to Paul, who was deeply into Christian music? And
oh, not at all. It was viewed properly or improperly as, although I have great remorse over that for years and years ago, but they knew at the time that it was a different era of teeny boppers and pursuit of artists, and they looked upon it in those ways. Whereas today, of course, we look upon it differently, and you know, that doesn't excuse the reality, but it was indeed a different from the way it would be looked at today. And I got a presidential pardon. And
right.
Those
How
things.
Do you think it would be looked at today? Is this? Are we more clear-eyed about things today, or are we more, you know, confused than ever?
I think that we are in a time of the most precipitous challenge that we've ever seen in the world. I think that the making mistakes now, for instance, continuing with our present climate policy, can actually spell the end of the world. Irreversible climate change has already taken place, and that is a fact of reality and life. Mm-hmm. And the spirit of mean-spiritedness and humiliation and cruelty that surrounds us, whether it's kids who are committing suicide or what happened in Newtown where I created a concert,
right,
you know, after there, we're seeing the black hole of empathy. And you put those things together, what you need to do in this time, and this is where all the flowers have gone, to answer your question, is to understand that political change itself is not going to get us where we need to go. What we need is something to allow us a change of heart, a change of culture, so that we do it. Essentially, it's all about this. If we care about each other, we will take care of each other. So remember you asked about Peter, Paul, and Mary being in this maelstrom of wonderment, and how we
I wish it. I had used that phrase, a maelstrom of wonderment. That was pretty good.
And I said, you know, you can't don't see it
right
when you're doing it. When you're working on changing the world, when you're going to the Black Hills as I just did, you're not thinking about, am I optimistic? You are living the optimism and the determination.
Peter Yarrow, my guest here in the Soundcheck studio. The book is Peter, Paul, and Mary, 50 Years in Life and Song. It is out now. The documentary, 50 Years with Peter, Paul, and Mary, comes to PBS on December 1st. You can also find the newly released collection of first-time songs never before heard on any of Peter, Paul, and Mary's albums called Discovered Live in Concert. That comes out on November 17th. Peter, thank you so much for being with us today. It's really been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
You say you see no hope. You say you see no reason we should dream that the world could ever change. You say that love is foolish to believe, 'cause there'll always be some crazy with an army or a knife to wake you from your daydream, put the fear back in your life. Look, if someone wrote a play just to glorify what's stronger than hate, would they not arrange the stage to make it look as if the hero came too late? He's almost defeat. It's looking like the evil side will win. So on the edge of every seat, from the moment that the whole thing begins, it is love who makes the mortar, and it's love who stack these songs.
That's a track from the upcoming Peter, Paul, and Mary Discovered album. It's called Show the Way. Up next, it's a live performance from Lily and Madeline, two sisters from Indianapolis whose knack for harmony caught the ear of songwriter and producer Sufjan Stevens. You'll hear what he heard when they join us for a live set next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The first video that Lily and Madeline Jerkowitz posted to YouTube 2 years ago this month was as simple as it gets. A single black and white shot of two teenage girls sitting in front of a microphone, one of them playing guitar as they harmonize together through a song that's not even 2 minutes long. Fast forward these 2 years, and Lily and Madeline, sisters from Indianapolis, have released two full-length albums and are filling clubs from Nashville to Berlin. Today, Lily and Madeline join us to play some songs from their new album called Fumes. This first one is called Rabbit. Here's Lily and Madeline live on Soundcheck.
2, 3.
That's Lily and Madeline live on Soundcheck with their song Rabbit. That comes from their latest album, their second, called Fumes. And you heard Lily singing and playing guitar, Madeline singing and playing our piano, Shannon Hayden playing the mandolin, although she'll be switching to cello momentarily. Lily and Madeline, guys, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, thank you for having us.
So when did you guys start singing together, like, seriously?
I would say 3 years ago, when we started writing our own music, when we met our now manager and producer, Paul Mahern.
Now, how did you meet him? Because that's a neat story.
Yeah, we were introduced to him through a family friend, Faith Cohen. And we live in Indianapolis, Indiana, and Paul lives in Bloomington, Indiana, which is just like an hour south, so not too far.
University town, has its own music scene. Uh-huh.
And Paul had been in that scene for a very, very long time, so he knew a lot. And so when we met him, we didn't really understand what being in the music scene or being in the music industry was like. But then he asked us to start, you know, trying to write our own music and kind of mentored us from the beginning.
But you guys, you did like a demo for a video. People can find it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Where you did this Richard Thompson song.
Yeah. Dimming of the Day.
And I couldn't even hardly play guitar at that time. Mom played guitar.
I think she
did. That song.
Yeah.
So mom's a musician as well?
Yeah. She encouraged us, like, you know, our whole lives to love music, but not in like a pushy way. Like, we did piano lessons, but that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, obviously, for Madeline, they took.
Lily was really good.
Yeah. All right. So what was playing in the house? You know, what kind of music did you grow up with?
Lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Mom really liked more of like the female singer-songwriters like Sean Colvin.
Shania Twain.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Totally, yeah. I remember like dancing in the basement to Shania Twain.
But Dad liked Nirvana and the Rolling Stones and Grateful Dead and that kind of thing, so...
Good for Dad.
Yeah.
All right. So you come to the attention of, you know, this producer slash manager. Mm-hmm. And then comes the moment where, you put your first song, the one I mentioned in the intro, up on YouTube. And somehow it gets onto Reddit and it becomes like a front page thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is how you came to the attention of Sufjan Stevens' label, Asthmatic Kitty.
I think so. I don't know if they ever saw that.
They're partially based in Indianapolis, so I think we just got like some local buzz after we got a couple shows down.
Didn't know
that.
We released the
EP independently.
Yeah.
And then I think they just heard about us locally and decided to sign us. Okay. I think that's how.
Because Sufjan Stevens, noted singer, songwriter, composer, producer,
everything,
orchestrator,
genius.
You know, is such a part of the Brooklyn scene that we think of that record label as very much a Brooklyn thing. But so they have like an outpost in Indianapolis.
Yeah, Indianapolis and Lander, Wyoming. And so it was just a good local fit, I guess. And the people there at the Indianapolis office are very, very kind, very welcoming, let us have a lot of creative freedom. And Sufjan himself is a super cool dude. Mm-hmm. So we're lucky.
All right. We're speaking with Lily and Madeline, and their new album is called Fumes. It is out now on Sufjan's Asthmatic Kitty label. The second in their stated goal to release 3 albums in 3 years, which I'll ask you guys about in a few minutes. But do you want to do another song for us?
Yes.
All right. Let's hear Can't Admit It, another live performance from Lily and Madeline. And Shannon will switch from mandolin to cello for this song. Once again, it's called Can't Admit It.
Late at night, end up crying. When I told you everything's all right, I was lying. I'm not so sure I want this anymore, and I'm not so sure I need it. I thought I knew what it was that I wanted. I'm not so sure I want
The song's called Can't Admit It, live performance in the Soundcheck studio from Lily and Madeline, the Jerkowitz sisters from Indianapolis. And as Lily and Madeline, they've recorded now two albums. This is from their most recent one called Fumes. Once again, Madeline at our piano. Lily put down the guitar for that one, not needed. Shannon Hayden playing the electric cello with a little looping involved as well. And Madeline, you said something before about, you know, when you first met your manager and producer, Paul Mahern, he told you guys that you needed to start writing. Well, that's easier said than done.
So. Oh, definitely.
So what, you know, how do you go from being two sisters harmonizing at home to actually being songwriters? What was that process like?
At first, I admit it was kind of difficult, and we kind of fought about it a little bit, but it's gotten easier and easier, and we were lucky enough to be introduced to our good friend now, Kenny Childers, who is a friend of Paul's, who lives in Bloomington, and he's been our writing mentor, I suppose, and writing partner since the beginning. And I don't know about you, Lily, but I feel a whole lot more confident now writing.
Definitely. Although I'm more picky with like the songs that we record, because I don't want to do the same thing over and over.
I suppose. But I feel like at the beginning, we were on the same page with a lot of things because we're sisters. You know, we've lived the same life, a very similar life. And so it wasn't difficult to relate to each other. It was just kind of difficult to put into words. Mm-hmm. But now I think things have gotten easier.
So is one person responsible mostly for lyrics and the other for music, or is it more fluid than that?
I think it's more fluid than that. I like music better just because I think it's easier. But it's, I don't know, we kind of switch on and off.
Yeah.
People ask us that a lot, but I feel like it's kind of 50-50.
Well, now, Lily, you just said you don't want to, you know, keep doing the same old thing. Mm-hmm. Even within this one record, Fumes, there's a pretty broad spectrum of sounds. You know, the opening title track, Fumes, mm-hmm. is very different from, say, The Wolf is Free, which has a kind of a big kind of almost 80s new wave pop sound to
That's
it.
That's cool, thanks.
So was that intentional, trying to stake out a broad territory like that?
Yeah, we had a lot more time to record this record, and although we wrote it in about the same amount of time, mm-hmm. the production of it, we spent a lot more time on each individual song, making everything unique and different from the first album, because we recorded that one in about 2 weeks, like three songs a day, so that was very rushed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now you've got the second record, you're on this fairly extensive tour, and Lily, shouldn't you be in school?
Well, technically, yes. I'm doing online classes, but I'm just not worrying about that right now.
Yeah. So you're, what, in your senior year of high school? And for you, Madeline, college?
I've just taken a break. I took one semester at Indiana University in Bloomington, and then Lily and I decided to go on tour, so we'll see. I'll come back to it.
Okay. In the meantime, there is this thing about doing three albums in 3 years, which is, you know, a fairly ambitious thing for, you know, a group just starting out. Was there some master plan at work here, or did it just seem like a good idea at the time?
I'm not exactly sure where that idea came from. When we saw it in the press release, I think we were like, what? We didn't say that. But now I kind of want to do three albums
in three years. I feel like we can do it. And we're not promising a third album anytime soon, but we are, you know,
press release says 3 years.
We'll
see. Three albums in 3 years.
Technically, you've already released an EP and two albums, so that could be considered like three albums.
All right. Well, Fumes is the name of the latest one, Lily and Madeline's second album, on the road to three albums in 3 years, perhaps. This has been great fun having you guys stop by
and
play for us. You have a song to play us out with?
Yes. We do.
And is it the title track?
It is. This is Fumes.
Fumes is the name of the record and the name of the song. It's the album's out now, and the band is playing for us here live in the Soundcheck studio. Here's the title track from the album Fumes.
Ready?
to get out of it. Complacency is the currency. Good enough is enough for me. Good enough for me.
Live on Soundcheck, that's Lillian Madeline with the title track from their new album, Fumes. It's out now. Up next, hear a sneak preview of our upcoming podcast with the New Zealand singer and guitarist, Kimbra. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Most of us got to know the singer and guitarist and producer Kimbra from her 2012 duet with the Belgian-Australian singer Gautier. That was the song Somebody That I Used to Know. In addition to becoming a chart-topping hit, that song also won Grammy Awards for Record of the Year and Best Pop Duo / Group Performance. But if you only know Kimbra from that one song, well, you're kind of missing out. Kimbra is a powerhouse vocal artist with a passion for electronics, and she recently performed songs from her latest album, called The Golden Echo, in the green space here at WNYC. We streamed video of her performance live, and if you look closely, you might spot Jad Abumrad, host of Radiolab, sitting in the front row. He's a really big fan. You can watch Kimbra's entire performance on our website, soundcheck.org. We'll also be podcasting it next week. But for now, take a listen to Kimbra performing her song Love in High Places for Jad and the rest of us here at WNYC.
Oh, your shining light, galvanize, I'll make you burn all up inside. There's a place I'm saving to keep me strong. There's a place that I'm craving. We can stay for long. I will be your lotus, growing slow so you don't notice. Hey, hey, out of the dead one and the deceased, the close and then you'll find me. There's a place that I'm saving to keep me strong. There's a place that I'm craving, 'cause we can't stay for long. Find me in the forest, in the fire. Find me in the midst of your desire.
That's Kimbra with her song Love in High Places. See photos and video at soundcheck.org and catch our podcast with Kimbra next week. It'll be up at soundcheck.org. On our next show, Idina Menzel of Frozen and Wicked fame joins us along with composer Tom Kitt to perform songs from the Broadway show If Then. Idina will talk about motherhood, her so-called fanzels, and about joining the long line of Jewish musicians who've put out Christmas albums. Plus, we'll look at why duos are such a powerful force in the creative world and bring you a Fergie-themed edition of That Was a Hit. Also, starting next Monday, November 17th, Soundcheck is going all digital. For those of you who listen online or via podcast, this won't be a big deal. But if you listen only on the radio, it'll be a bit of a switch. Instead of listening to us on the air at a specific time, you'll find us anytime at soundcheck.org. As always, we'll bring you daily music news, exclusive videos like the Kimbra performance we just sampled, live music streams, playlists, and all the rest of what you listen to Soundcheck for. So if you're not already subscribed to our free podcast on iTunes, now's the time to find us in the iTunes store and subscribe. Leave a review while you're at it. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter so we can let you know when all this cool stuff is available. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.